$38 billion is on the line in the defense budget debate. It could end up in the overseas contingency operations budget. It could end up in the base budget. And it could end up on the cutting room floor. If the money stays one place or another, most of it would go to operations and maintenance programs. But that may not be where it's intended to go. Cameron Luthy is a senior budget analyst at Bloomberg Government. My first guest on Industry Chatter today, looking at who could win big in the budget stakes. Cameron, it's terrific to have you on the program. This all gets to the point of what some people in Congress, including some Republicans, are calling this budget gimmick of honoring, as you write, the letter but not the spirit of the Budget Control Act. A whole bunch of extra money added to the overseas contingency operation budget that shouldn't really be there. Where do we stand with that right now before we talk about your terrific analysis about what it could all mean? Thanks for being on today, Cameron.
Great to be here with you. Well, I think the status, if you will, the congressional process winds a crooked road, but we're at the point now where the House has its authorization bill for this year. The Senate has reported out its version of the authorization bill from committee, and meanwhile, the appropriators are beginning to unveil their approach. But in each of these cases, they're following the guidance from the budget resolution, the Republican Congress adopted, which basically said, how do we square this circle? We want to adhere to the caps, but we don't want to come off as having asked for less money for defense than the president, who put that $38 billion in the base budget. What'll we do? Well, the solution they came up with, as you put it, referred to by some as a gimmick, is to stuff the extra money in the overseas contingency operations or war budget.
I trust few people about the defense budget more than I trust Bob Hale, the former comptroller at the Department of Defense. And he tells me that this is not good operationally for the agency because they can't plan for the items that are in the OCO long term. And you can find my conversations with Bob at federalnewsradio.com. Search Bob Hale. You write in your latest analysis on BGov, the war budget's being stuffed with services and smaller programs funded with operation and maintenance money, not with aircraft, missiles, and other big programs funded with procurement dollars. It sounds to me like that exacerbates what Bob's talking about. What's the impact that would have on those O&M programs, and why does that mean, or what does that mean for the bigger ticket items that will now be in the base budget, Cameron?
Well, on the O&M side, of course, it lends some uncertainty about readiness levels, because if they don't get all that money, they've cut the base O&M funding considerably and put the difference in the war budget. Well, if they don't get it there, then they're going to really have a readiness problem. But the shell game is really designed in some ways to benefit the acquisition program, specifically procurement, less so the R&D accounts. And that's where there's an extra level of uncertainty, because on the one hand, the big OEMs, the big five weapon system manufacturers say, hey, this is great. The House and Senate provided slightly more for procurement than the president would. This is wonderful news. The problem is, this is going to be part of a long negotiation that probably runs until Christmas.
You write, the House Armed Services Committee recommends $1.15 billion in funding for 12 additional Boeing FA-18s, $975 million more than requested for six extra F-35s, the Marine Corps version. And the HASC also wants to add $110 million for infrared countermeasures upgrades to Apache helicopters. And you have some other details in here as well. When the big five, as you term them, benefit, who benefits further down the chain, Cameron?
Well, obviously, the supply chain and parts manufacturing, there are a number of companies in various sizes that benefit. And if you increase the size of the fleet, of course, you also have contractor logistics support funded out of the O&M dollars down the road. The more aircraft you have in the fleet, the more vehicles you have in the fleet, of course, the more you need to maintain. So, the potential here is for considerable ripple effect, if you will, throughout the industrial base supporting the Defense Department. And it's also kind of like, the Sherlock Holmes story, the dog didn't bark.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about what didn't get cut that would have been if they'd hadn't played this shell game with Oko.
Is there a way to know what that is? Are there markers or indicators of what could have been close to the edge?
There really aren't. I mean, and the irony is, of course, that part of what the House and Senate Armed Services Committees are doing is they're responding to unfunded requirements lists that came out of the military services, separate and apart from the regular budget request.
Now, we've learned recently, just in the last couple of days, and I believe it's your colleagues at Bloomberg Government that reported it, that the White House, in addition to proposing that on their budget passback, that agencies do a 5% cut for planning for fiscal 17 as the Office of Management and Budget starts to coordinate that response. They've also added the 5% essentially wish list provision, which we had not heard of before. And it sounds like what you're saying is that that's where HASC and SASC were taking their additions from that wish list. Do I understand correctly?
Yeah, in a way, what's happened starting in the fiscal 13 authorization bill for defense, the Congress told the services, hey, you know, you used to send us these unfunded requirements lists, things that didn't make the cut, that weren't in the budget. Well, we'd like to see those again. Gates had sort of squashed those, right? And so that's part of what's going on now. And, of course, in the budget guidance, this is, as you know, I spent a long time at OMB and I also worked in DOD. And this is not that unusual for OMB to say, hey, tell us what you would do if you had to deal with 5% less. And then what are your priorities if you were able to have more money? And of course, those need to be justified in terms of the president's priorities. So, you know, there are two aspects to this. It gets to revealed preference on the part of the agencies and gives the president, if you will, a kitty, right? If you tell everybody you got to cut back 5%, that gives the president a kitty so that then he can pick and choose winners and losers from across the federal agencies and say, ah, yes, this is a good idea. We need to spend more money on this.
And it's particularly telling, I think, at this point in the administration, Cameron, because the Obama administration obviously wants to either institutionalize the programs and priorities that they think have been well served by extra money in the past 6.5 years, or to institutionalize processes and procedures that will support the priorities that they've laid in during that time.
Sure. And, you know, if you think about it, you've been around long enough, so have I. This is the last year where, you know, building towards the fiscal 17 budget that'll come out next February. This will be the last budget the president proposes that will, you know, have some legs to it, because anything he proposes towards the end of his term, you know, it gets less and less traction and the new president comes in and reorders priorities.
You write at the end of this, contractors will be hoping for a happy holidays outcome, and you suggested a few moments ago in our conversation this could last till December. What makes you think that's the right time frame, given the fiscal year ends September 30th?
There are two or three reasons. The first reason is it's not an election year, so there's no hurry to rush out and leave town. The second reason is, you've heard the joke, there's nothing like the smell of jet fumes to motivate Congress to get things done, right? The second reason is that's the pattern we had a few years ago. Everybody remembers the deal cut between Senator Murray and Chairman Ryan,
yes,
Ryan on the Republican side that raised the spending caps for fiscal 14 and fiscal 15. Well, that deal got cut in December. So those are two reasons why we think this is going to last a long time. That means, of course, and this is important for all your listeners, that the fiscal year starting October 1 will undoubtedly start with a continuing resolution, which means funding will be frozen at basically this year's levels until they can negotiate some sort of deal that may look like the Ryan Murray deal, where you get a little extra money for defense, a little extra money for non-defense, and maybe a little money extra in the OCO bucket, the sausage that we were stuffing earlier.
That noise that you just heard as you said that was the groans from people all across the executive branch hearing you bring up the letters CR again, Cameron, but I know it's not your fault, so the blame's not on you.
Yeah, well, we've been to this movie before,
yes.
And I think business sort of builds in. I mean, I've seen the quarterly filings of the SEC. They build in that as one of the risks of doing business with Uncle Sam.